Psychic researcher. He spent a lot of years researching UFOs, or unidentified flying objects. Would you please welcome Mr. Peter Eucher?
Good morning to you.
Oops.
That's one way to start. Now that I'm awake, we can talk.
Peter, one of the things that we found out before the show, which I find fascinating about you as a person who is so much into UFOs, is the fact that you have never seen one. Is that correct?
Right, never seen one. Well, because at my end, I have to be twice as careful, you know, before I say it's a UFO. I think of about 1,000 explanations why it isn't, even if it probably might have been.
Well, the next logical question for you, then, is do you believe in them?
Absolutely. I think for science generally, or for people, to dismiss UFOs is the same reasoning a person would dismiss a recurring dream. It's going to keep on coming till we finally learn what it's all about or what it's for.
But now, you mentioned earlier that what you're interested in now is not so much finding out about the sightings themselves as about the people who see them.
Yeah, well, the witness is sometimes more important than the UFO, because I consider UFOs to be a projection of something else. For example, witnesses, whether they see a UFO or not depends often on what kind of a last name they have. The blood type is possibly
now
related.
Let me stop you right there. Now, that sounds crazy to me. The last name that they have, what does that mean with regard to UFO sightings?
Well, the best way I can explain that is, for example, on March 30th, because Canada's been going under a lot of UFO activity this year, on March 30th, there was a UFO sighting in Slave Lake, Alberta. Okay, now at the time, by coincidence, there was a contactee on a lecture tour at the time, whose name was Major Aho. Now, by strange coincidence, this is an unusual name. There are not too many people with the name of Aho in the world, you know. But what happened on May 30th, curiously enough, the greatest Canadian mining expert as far as the Yukon was concerned, who started Yukon Mining all on his own, he died on May 30th, and the Yukon is undergoing quite a bit of UFO activity at this time, and his name was Aho, and he died on May 30th. You see, there's a connection here, possibly.
Do you think that somehow alien beings select out certain types of people?
Yeah, because even contactees are selected. Because
what other selection process? An unusual name? Any other?
Blood type. For example, most contactees are of Rh negative, and most contactees have Indian and Gypsy heritage quite often in their background somewhere along the lines. That all has to be related to the process as a whole.
Well, your last name is an unusual one, Eucher.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen one, but I'm in it.
Any day it's going to happen to you.
Any day.
So we have blood type, we have unusual last name. So when you document or research a UFO sighting, I suppose one of the first things you want to do is find out a blood type, find out the spelling of the last name, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. For example, a last name could sometimes be related to, you'll find it, the meaning of the word or the last name in a mythological dictionary, which might explain a connection. For example, an area in Ontario that gets a lot of UFO sightings is an area called Medoc. Well, curiously enough, and what got me curious was there was a poem written in the 1800s by a British poet about the Serpent Mounds in the Ohio Valley. And the name of the poem was called Medoc. And the serpents and UFOs, they've been connected by every writer and UFO researcher since we started in this. And so, you see, there's a connection to names here somewhere. They play games.
You've got some sketches here that you made up. Maybe we could show. Why don't you explain what these are? You mentioned earlier that you did not bring photographs, partly because they're so easy to...
Yeah, people don't accept photographs anyway.
Why don't you hold them, Jan, to one of the cameras over here?
Yeah, well, we want to look at 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. Now, these are from actual sightings.
Yeah, these are from contactee sightings that people had, and from contactees that have undergone hypnosis and lie detector tests and the usual, you know, studies that go along with it.
Now, they're all three different. What is that?
This is the problem. You see, now we've got three contactees here. All three of them are different. Now, the first reaction is to say, well, they're all telling a terrible story because none of these people are the same. There can't be that many different races playing around. So, but rather than that, I think the answer lies in considering the UFO occupant or entity is probably a better word to use as a projection of something else. Maybe the UFO identity was created by something else in the background.
Now, what does that mean, though? It's a projection
like,
of something else.
What I'm getting at is something else. For example, in parapsychology, for example, people that study haunted houses or mediums that go into haunted houses, they'll tell you they'll get a history of the house off the wall because the wall is supposed to absorb the personality of the people that live in it. Well, it's quite possible that somehow this is a clue to perhaps how the UFO occupants get created.
But, so in other words, people see their vision of UFOs, their fears, if they're afraid of them, they see a fearful creature.
Yeah, because you see these drawings, or the description of these people shows another area. For example, one kidnapping has never produced a phenomena of a breathing problem, you see, which struck me as curious. Because of all these different descriptions of people, they can't all be, you know, they all don't show any problems. And the Earth people that are allegedly kidnapped don't show any problems breathing aboard the UFO.
I see. So people that have made these drawings from their memory of the extraterrestrial being that they encountered, they were all fairly healthy individuals as far as their respiratory systems were concerned. And you're sort of leading us to think then that perhaps the beings kidnapped them to study their breathing systems and how they existed on Earth. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm getting at is that perhaps the UFO itself is only a temporary thing.
It's an hallucination in effect.
That made to look solid. You see, maybe they weren't on a UFO to begin with. It just made to look like a UFO. Because all these different creatures seem to get along with the same type of atmosphere that the people do that got kidnapped.
If they were really things from outer space, they wouldn't be able to breathe
right,
our atmosphere.
Right, that's what I'm suggesting. There's a problem.
So you see it now as is this general sort of accepted in?
Not yet.
You
I'm riding on dangerous territory.
Much closer to a hallucination, but you would say it's an hallucination caused by alien beings.
For example, some of the bestsellers have been, for example, The Teachings of Don Juan by Carlos Castaneda. Now, you can find every UFO description you've ever heard in Carlos Castaneda's books, which is a completely different area, but I think that's where the answer is going to be found.
Well, you know, speaking of the answer being found, though, I'm getting... you're coming at UFOs from an entirely different perspective than I think I'm accustomed to, or that I'm accustomed to, that I think most of the audience out there is accustomed to, which is aliens from other parts of the galaxy and the universe. And you're saying that perhaps as we get to know man and sort of man's parapsychological character a little more, that we're going to understand that UFOs are just simply a projection of a human being as opposed to any extraterrestrial sort of phenomena.
But caused by it.
Both. They're both involved. On UFOs, I prefer the interdimensional theory, which to me is the most logical. I don't see how you can get out of it. Because, for example, there are UFO landing sites. But strangely enough, the landing sites are rather strange. They happen at the same places where there's usually water, swamps, which is actually almost like animal behavior, too, like UFOs that follow airplanes. Well, animals do that. Seagulls follow ships all over the world.
We're going to give you a chance to talk about this a bit more. We're also going to give you a chance to call in and ask some questions. You can call in. The number is 223-5150. So we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Peter Euchre, who was the editor of the Canadian Psychic Researcher, a magazine that, among other things, investigates UFOs and UFO sightings, has got a question for you.
Mr. Euchre, I'd like to ask you how you check out a sighting when you hear of a report.
Well, as much as I like you, I'm going to be very honest with you. It's not possible to check all sightings out personally. It's literally impossible. And one of the drawbacks to it is that the UFO does never wait for you to get there, you know. By the time you get there, it's probably in Kalamazoo or something, you know. That's why you have to concentrate on the witness. And, of course, you look for landing traces if that's involved. It depends what kind of a sighting it is. But usually when they say, well, just a light in the sky, there isn't really much more you can do with it. You know, you pretty well leave it just the way it is. What are you going to do with it?
Do you give any lie detector tests?
Oh, yes. When the stories get that deeply involved, you have to.
What is, when we talk about sightings, what is a story that to you is perhaps the most convincing in your experience that you have both heard? Either way, personal, for example, that convinces you more than any other story that you've heard that there is some real credibility in UFOs.
Well, of course, the one that stands out all the time is the Betty and Barney Hill one. And, of course, the new one with the three ladies in Kentucky is just as valid. But, for example, I don't believe the Travis Walton story.
What happened to the three ladies in Kentucky?
Well, they were driving along, and then they started starting strange things, and... You know, then the car started behaving strangely, and they lost time. That's how usually only it's remembered, is because they lost time.
And were all three stories were...
They all matched, and all three supply detective tests, hypnosis, and the stories all matched. I think it's just as valid as the Betty and Barney Hill.
Let's take a question. Good morning, you're on the air.
Good morning. I was wondering if your guest was familiar with the book called Missionaries Extraordinaire.
Yes, I am.
You are. What did you think of the way that they seem to explain whether this UFOs are logical in their sense and their explanation?
You're talking about Bo and Peep, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I don't believe them.
I wondered about
that. Because I tell you why. What they say, you can find in a novel called Slaughterhouse Five.
All right, we have another question for you up here.
Okay, Mr. Uecker, in your opinion, why are there so many sightings in the Northwest than any other part of the country?
Not really. Actually, the heaviest place is West Virginia. Sorry about that.
I have to say that I asked that young man. So I'm guilty. But that's not necessarily. There used to be a lot of sightings in the Northwest.
Yeah.
A lot in West Virginia. There used to be a lot up here.
Yeah. As a matter of fact.
Does this mean that there is some kind of meeting ground for UFOs? They sort of huddle here and then fly up elsewhere? Or what?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's places where they show up, just about all the time, like Warminster, England. If a visitor goes over to England, they should go to Warminster because your chances of seeing a UFO are just unbelievable. They're about almost 99% sure of seeing one in Warminster, England, which is the highest activity in the world. But Washington State, by the way, you deserve congratulations. This is the 30th anniversary of the modern UFO in 2 days. We should go out and celebrate. But the whether UFOs around Washington also depends on the weather, because I think they do affect the weather. For example, I think Canada is getting high UFO activity right now because this is where the weather patterns are. So if you start getting drought in certain places or flooding in others, it's possible that the UFO is connected to a certain degree to it.
Let's take another question. Good morning, you're on the air.
Yes, I have some friends that are into astral travel, where they can go from one place to another, not physically, but in their mind, and they've had friends perceive them there. Now, I was wondering if, as far as UFOs, if your interdimensional idea that you were talking about, if they might not be doing the same thing, actually not being there, but just being perceived.
That's quite possible. For example, you can... Probably the way to attack what you're suggesting is to say that what's the purpose of evolution? If, by chance, the purpose of evolution, the ultimate development of evolution is where man becomes pure energy, then should you become pure energy, then you can turn into any shape that you want to.
Another question from the audience for you.
Is there any evidence that there's been a government or military cover-up of UFOs?
I don't push that very much. because... If the major scientists of the world don't understand it, how the government is going to understand it, I'll never know.
What about Project Blue Book? Why did the Air Force, for example, I think it was sometime in the 60s, early 60s, they canceled Project Blue Book, which was the way they had documented and kept track of all UFO sightings.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that shutting off of Project Blue Book as an effort on the part of the Air Force to sort of...
No, I don't think the Air Force really knows anything. If anybody knows anything about UFOs, believe it or not, it's the U.S. Navy, because they do UFO research. The Air Force doesn't.
Okay, let's take another question. Good morning, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to know if there's anything one can do to make oneself more receptive to sighting a UFO.
Absolutely, but that's going to take me too long on the air. If you can call me privately, I'll tell you about it.
Can you give it a hint?
Don't worry, I will.
Well, no, because it has to do, for example, the best day of the week to see a UFO is a Wednesday. The best time to see one is 10 p.m., and the closer to the 24th of the month, the better. And also, depending on what you learn about UFOs, you increase your chances of seeing a UFO. And like I said, it also depends on your last name.
Have you ever tried your own technique, though? You don't want to see one.
I don't have time.
Is the weather now partly in what you said earlier, in conjunction with all the sightings they've been having around the United States and the world?
Let me follow you. Do I think all of them are connected to the weather?
No, I mean the droughts and the bad winter they
There's
had.
There's a possible connection to it, very much so.
I mean, were there any...
You see, what I'm saying is, for example, if there's a drought in, well, just for example, a drought in California, I'm not saying that the UFOs are going to show up in California. They might be two states away, or they might be further away because the weather patterns, you know, they take a, you know, they don't just stay solidly over one area all the time.
Well, what kind of evidence? Is that because you see UFOs where there's strange weather, or...
The weather, well, okay, the best way to do it is you'll see books on the market written by Wilhelm Reich, and I'm a firm believer in Reich, and I think there's a lot of evidence to show that it worked.
And he's somebody else who's gathered evidence that sort of draws them together?
Yeah, absolutely.
Peter, there's one thing I wanted to ask you about, and maybe you folks remember this, about, what was it, about a year and a half, 2 years ago? A strange chrome ball or silver ball fell out of the sky someplace. And newspapers all across the country carried accounts of this thing that seemed to be able to move on its own. It would roll.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, we didn't hear anything about it for a while. We haven't heard anything about that particular thing since. Have you done any follow-up?
You won't be able to find anything else on it. It's, I don't know. You see, these things happen all through history. For example, somebody finds a steel screw in an old coal bed, you see. Now, you'll see the screw photographed or put in the newspaper for one issue, and then all of a sudden the article disappears, the screw disappears, all the evidence is gone, it's like it never existed. I think somebody makes sure along the line that certain things just naturally sort of disappear on the side. I think there's somebody that makes sure of that.
Well, what happened to this particular thing? Do you have any idea?
Who knows? I really don't know. I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't know because I've never been able to see anything else on it.
Well... You mentioned before that you don't believe all sightings. What percentage do you think are valid? And
well, for example, I can just take on the average of mine, maybe 4 out of 100.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I had a question. I noticed that he referred to Carlos. Now, Carlos was a definite heavy peyote user, and I wondered how can you relate, you know, his visions when he was, you know, shall we say, stoned, to UFOs.
What I was getting at, and the reason I was saying it, was because of the descriptions or similarities. You'll find in there where a fog oozed out. You'll find circular objects involved, strange shapes. They all match UFO descriptions. And his writings of what he called the ally matches the descriptions of aliens very well. There's a definite connection between magic and UFOs, and that's why I mentioned it.
Yes, Mr. UK, do you have any experience with aliens on this planet? First-hand experience?
Yes, I do. Sorry you said that. He must have made put you up to it. put it this way, because all I can tell you about it is this. I have a photograph at home, which is allegedly to be of an alien. They're gypsy-looking, and documentation of the photograph includes the police department, so I think it's a valid picture of an alien, and it's shown sitting in somebody's living room.
Have you yourself talked to the police? Have you checked their stories and confirmed it? How do you do this? I mean, it's very easy.
It takes a lot of paperwork.
Well, all the evidence disappears, and, you know, if you're talking about some kind of phenomenon like this, it's going to be very difficult to check these things. So what kind of standards of research do you set for yourself?
Well, heavens, my writing and tracking down stories includes everybody, and I'm serious, I've got the letters to prove it. Documentation or checking out stories includes everything from letters to the committee studying the assassinations of Kennedy, letters to certain senators to get information. I try every route I possibly can.
And do you make visits across the country and talk to these people and see them?
Well, sometimes. It depends, you know.
I want to ask you about, as long as we're talking about photographs, is the fact that, you know, it's always been very disappointing to me that the quality of photographs of UFOs that you'll see in any book on flying saucers, are, you know, the quality is very bad. Yeah, it could be simply someone who took a picnic plate with the potato salad in the right place and threw it into the sky, and somebody shot a Polaroid.
Yeah, they've done it, too.
You know, I'm sure it's been done. It always has bothered me. Do you have...
apple pie from Mars.
Do you have in your possession some photographs that really appear to be authentic?
Well, to me, the most authenticated photograph of a UFO is the one that was taken in Spain in 1967. Because it is the only photograph of a UFO taken by two different people at the same time. And now with the new computer process they have, where they check out UFO photographs by running it through the computer, and the computer shows up whether there is something else, whether it's solid, or whether it's just a pie plate.
What does it
say? And so this new process really separates good photographs from the bad ones. And it's a good step forward.
And this is authentic. At least nothing's been superimposed on it.
No. And you see, it's taken by two different people at two different spots, but it's the same UFO, so that's definitely a good one.
Separates the good photographs from the potato salad.
Right.
If you have any first-hand experience with UFOs and would like to contact Peter Euchre, he will be in the Seattle area today, and the number is 839-5959. 839-5959, and of course, you can buy subscription. Obtain his magazine, The Canadian Psychic Researcher. Peter, thank you for joining us in Seattle today.
Well,
Peter,
thank you very much.